Well, hello everybody. Today is Saturday, November 23rd, 2019. Welcome to our Contract Trust Conference Call. We are not accountants, tax professionals, lawyers, or currency dealers. We are not engaged in rendering legal, tax, accounting, or other professional advice. Should you require those services, you should retain competent advice from a professional in that field. Thank you for joining us today. My name is Carol Willis. And my associate, Jim Knox, and I have these calls every second and fourth Saturday of the month. They're recorded and available on our website, www.information.com.
Carol?
Yes?
Carol, you're breaking up really, really bad.
Turn it up. These calls are recorded and available on our website, www.indicatorinformation.com, iqdcalls.com, and YouTube. For you to protect your assets. As always, your questions are welcome. Just dial *6 to raise your hand. Is that any clearer, Jim?
It's still breaking up pretty bad, but a little bit better. Keep going.
Okay, I've got it turned up as high as it will go. Okay, well, hope for the best. Okay, so before we get too much into talking about contract trust today, we need to address some housekeeping issues. You know, as clients, you're invited to join our members-only website. We have formatted it as members-only for several reasons. In the past, we have been hacked several times to the point that the whole site goes down. That requires hours of work to get it back up and threatens the security of our database and therefore your information. The information that we have provided for you has been created for use with our trust. We are not interested in providing free help to those who have purchased somebody else's trust. We do have some public information on the site with an affiliate to contact us for more information. We have recently become aware of someone providing their login information to others. And while we appreciate the opportunity to work with new clients, we cannot afford to let others view the site without participating in our products. If nothing else, it's not fair to those of you who have purchased your trust and thus legitimate access to the website. So just bear in mind, folks, that your login is your login and it's private to you. We would appreciate if you did not pass it along. And for those of you that have been listening to me for a while, you know that I started these calls while working with Jim Jenkins. Many of you know that Jim has had some serious health issues in recent years and has since retired. I speak with Jim and his wife, Judy, often. They are both fine and anticipating the RV just like the rest of us. I'm sure Jim wouldn't mind if you called to say hello, but if you are interested in trust, he will refer you to me. So just please call me or Jim Knox first. We are still hearing talk about the RV, GCR being ready to go anytime now. In fact, I heard it's already started, just hasn't gotten to our level yet. We encourage you to be ready, as being prepared is always a good idea. We have been told, I think I'll just get the so-called skeleton trust from the bank and go from there. We try to advise against that. The bank is not your friend. The trust that they will create for you will more than likely name them as the trustee, giving them the power to do whatever they deem appropriate, probably without your approval. They can do a lot of damage to your account in the 30 to 90 days it takes you to get a proper trust created. So, again, I say just be prepared. That's not a good solution. It really is not a good solution. People have asked, well, why should I establish a trust rather than continue owning currency in my own name and social security number? Owning anything in your own name and social leaves your assets exposed. If you were to exchange in your own name, then have an accident or heart attack on the way home, all that money would be at risk, would be taxed at the federal rate of 40% after the $5.49 million exemption. The assets can be tied up in court for years, and your family may not see any of it for a very long time. Many have recommended that your accounts should be labeled as POD or payable at death. That takes care of the probate issue, but is still at risk of taxes and becomes public information. Having assets in your name leaves you wide open for lawsuits and others wanting to get part of your newfound wealth. On the other hand, if you exchange into a properly crafted trust and then have an accident or heart attack on the way home, the assets remain in the trust with no probate or estate taxes. It will be managed by the successor trustees that you have named, that you have previously named. Now, obviously, a properly crafted trust is the better alternative to either a skeleton trust or exchanging in your own name. While there are probably hundreds of other trusts out there, we feel our common law contract business trust provides you with the most flexibility and asset protection than any other. We realize that common law contract business trust is a mouthful, so we refer to it merely as contract trust. While it is in fact a true business trust, we have dropped the word business, and it's caused a lot of confusion, especially with bankers. But the trust still retains all the benefits and advantages of the business trust. And speaking of advantages, there are many of them to the contract trust. The contract trust owns and controls its assets through its trustees, who keep controlling minutes of their actions. You get to be the trustee. You can name your spouse as co-trustee and your children as successor trustees. As trustee, you are in total control of the trust and its assets. There is no one between you and your money. A person can transfer all of his or her property, real or personal, to a contract trust. Such property is thereby protected from personal liabilities, probate, and death taxes. The contract trusts that we prepare are irrevocable. The contract trust is born to live, not to die, as conventional statutory trusts. You know, another advantage of our trusts, and it might not seem like a big deal, but it really is, another advantage is that they do not require a lot of paperwork. We suggest you write at least 1 minute a year, and you should document all your major purchases. These trusts are private and do not have state or federal filing requirements unless they're actively operating a business. Some states, like Nevada, are now requiring recordation and a resident agent, so obviously we suggest you do not domicile your trust in Nevada anymore. We give you very specific directions on operating your trust, as well as instruction on writing minutes to document your actions. This, of course, saves you time and money. Our website, indicatorinformation.com, is full of sample minutes for your use. Again, the website is members only for your authorized use only. Please email either of us for an invite code to join. Sorry about that, folks. Several weeks ago, we reintroduced our management trust. For those of you who have read our multi-trust account information, it was called a maintenance trust. Some folks took the word maintenance a little too literally, so we decided to rename it the management trust. The management trust simplifies some of the issues associated with multiple properties and multiple vehicles. Imagine three different real estate trusts, each owning its own property. You know, one may be your primary residence, one may be a vacation home, and one may be an apartment building with, say, 12 units. They all require attention, be it maintenance, insurance, property taxes, collecting rents, etc. In this scenario, each real estate trust has its own bank account to pay for those expenses and a repository for the rental income. It could prove to be a headache, wouldn't you agree? We have a solution and a way to simplify these issues. We suggest the management trust as a less complicated and convoluted way to handle these issues. A properly funded and prepared real estate management trust can simplify issues by contracting with the individual real estate trust to control the funds, disperse funds, collect funds, much like an escrow account. It is responsible for all the issues related to property ownership. It will have one bank account with bank cards and checks to be used when appropriate. It can also be managed online, which we obviously suggest you do not do that with your mother-in-law. Banking and accounting will be less of a hassle. This trust, like most of your trusts, will be funded by the motherlode trust. The same principle applies to vehicle trusts. Let's face it, cars do not require bank accounts or EINs, but they do require management insurance, license tabs, inspections, maintenance, tires, oil changes, gasoline cards, etc. Now, a vehicle management trust would contract with the individual vehicle trust to handle these chores from one bank account. This vehicle management trust would also be funded by your mother-in-law trust. Jim, seeing how I'm tripping over my words, you want to take over for a little while?
All right. I'll give it a shot, see if I can do as bad. the question of purchasing property has come up a lot lately. While you can borrow from your mother-lode trust, it does require a loan or security agreement and payments of some kind. We feel the easier and cleaner way to do this is to have your mother-lode trust create and fund the real estate and the vehicle trust. The advantages of this are less paperwork, no loan payments, and the property is titled to the trust at the time of the purchase. We have recently been told that someone else said one trust cannot fund another trust without it being taxed. While that may be true of some statutory trusts, it's not true for the contract trusts. We have the expertise to do this. Many of you have your eyes on property now, but obviously cannot purchase until the RV. We suggest that you purchase the property in the name of the trust that you wish to set up. I have done this purchasing cars and was not questioned about the trust or any trust documents. Let's talk about that a little bit more. This is coming off the top of my head, folks, which is scary. Whenever you're going to do a contract and you don't have everything set up, I highly recommend that you use the words and or assigns. So it'd be Jim Knox and or assigns. And at the last moment, you can assign the contract directly to the trust. So you don't have to discuss with a seller that you're putting it in trust because they don't know what you're talking about. So that's just one of the ways I've always done with my real estate is and or assign. So my name and or assigns. And then I just simply assign it to the trust at the last moment, and nobody knows what's going on. Okay. Going on. If you are entering into an escrow agreement for real property, you may also use your own name followed by, well, there it is. I should have continued reading. And
really?
Oh, well. Only had a lot of coffee today. All right, continuing on down, whether you are funding real estate, vehicle or management trust, we suggest you put enough money into it at the outset. For an instance, if you are planning on a single piece of real estate, you need only the one real estate trust. You need to have enough funds to cover taxes, insurance, maintenance, and the like for many years to come. Plan for it now. If you're planning on multiple pieces of real estate, you should consider the management trust to take care of all of those expenses. So be sure to plan accordingly. A while back, one of our clients suggested investing the money from these trusts as a way to keep them self-sustaining. That's really not such a good idea, as it may put the principal at risk. You may want to charge yourself rent for that new home or lease payments for that new Porsche. That really helps with establishing that you do not own the property personally. Another way to find it is to borrow and then invest. Now, what I used to do, some of you know that I was raised in another state and did quite well, and when I had a specific cash flow from an asset, it was a lot of money, and it would sit there for 45 to 60 days, 90s before I had to use it. So what I was doing at that time is I was using the cash in the account, and I would borrow against that, using it as collateral. I'd borrow some money against that and put that to work. And then it would just, whenever I made enough money, then I would just put it back in my account. So consider doing that. So you take your account, let's say it's got $1 million in it, and you can borrow $200,000 or $300,000 with that as being collateral, and you can put that to work in a higher yield market, whatever you choose to do with that, and then you have some cash flow. But don't take your principal and go use it. Borrow against the principal. Okay, so that's pretty much where we're at. Carol, you want to go on?
Well, I thought you had a few other things you wanted to talk about right now.
Okay,
you
well, I've got those.
Some documents and stuff like that. Go ahead.
Okay, well, we've had some issues here recently with things not getting where they need to be. And so I'm going to start suggesting using some specific documents so you can track things. One of the things that I've been doing a lot is I use what they call a proof of service. Now, when I send a document and it gets the other side, they open it up, they can make a claim, Well, it was nothing in the envelope. Okay, well, how do you stop something like that? By the way, this just happened to me. So I've used a proof of service in the past. I'm going to start using them all the time now. The proof of service is a document that somebody else will produce and sign or even get it notarized that simply says, I was the person that took the piece of paper from Jim, I put it in the envelope, I sealed it, and I mailed it. Okay? And then you have a copy of that, and you send a copy in the envelope with everything. So when they get this document, and they see it's a proof of service there, they can't lie that they didn't get it. Okay? So the proof of service is very, very important in some situations. I can't remember.
You have a proof of archive.
Yeah, that too. The proof of archive I use for my trusts. And we've not talked about this. Probably should have a long time ago. A proof of archive actually was used when I was doing my $21. I would take and have a list of all of the notes that comprise the $21. And then I would take and put the serial number of the note in that. And that was a proof of service, and I sent that to myself, to my trust address. Remember, we talked about this here a while back, folks. If you ever get challenged, you take an unopened envelope to the judge. Well, in there is also the proof of service of the you sent it, how you sent it, and then the proof of archive is here's my 21 lawful dollars and all their serial numbers that I have for my trust proving that it's fully funded and funded with silver certificates, meaning real money. So that was the two things I really, really, really wanted to talk about today.
Okay.
We got lots more things. Do you want to open up some questions?
Yeah, I mean, you know, any time, star 6 to raise your hand, and we'll see what we can do to answer your questions. And I don't see any hands raised yet.
Okay.
But one of the things that we talked about, and a lot of people seem to have difficulty with, is signing your trust. And I know that you put that on the list, Jim. I like it. Why don't you go ahead and discuss that or read it or whatever you want to do with it.
Yeah, okay. We'll talk about that. As Carol said, we've had a lot of calls. Well, what do I do with this document? What do I do here? What do I do there? Well, I wrote up a three-pager, and it goes out in all the trusts that I've been sending out, and we're going to put it on the website today, and you can download it. And it just says instructions on signing your trust. On the left side of your binder, you will find the, and it has a list of all the things that you should see in there. And then on the right side of the binder, it tells you that you'll find your certificates, and you need to read them, you need to sign them. And it's just a complete list of everything you have to do to get your trust ready to go. So we're going to add that onto the website. So we're going to add these documents that we were just talking about. We'll have on the website later this morning proof of service, proof of archiving, and the instructions on signing your trust. We're also going to finish up getting all of the contract-based contracts done and get on there right away for the management trust, linking itself to a real estate trust, automobile trust, and so on and so forth. So we'll have all of that also. And I've been working for about 3 or 4 days trying to get all this stuff squared away.
This website is growing exponentially, but it really is a great resource for everybody. So please take advantage of it. We do have a couple questions, Jim.
Okay, before you take them, one last thing, everybody.
Okay.
We have everything set up on our 3itrustapp.com where you can purchase your trust. But for those of you that want to have terms that decide to do that, we have a contract on there that you can sign. And then we have a place where it's kind of hidden, not unintentionally, but this way it was, that little application that you can use does not require you to have money to be able to send that to us. If you do the standard one, then, of course, you have to use your credit card and so on and so forth. And so we'll put that little tidbit out there on the website also where that inadvertently hidden pages at. You remember what it was, Carol? I'm looking it up, and I can't.
Private-application.
Thank you. Yes, private-application. So you'd go to 3itrustapp.com, private-trust. No, private.
No, application.
Yeah. And I created it, folks. What can I say?
Yeah. We're both stumbling this morning.
Yeah. So we didn't want people using that by mistake. That's why we put private hyphen application on there. And then when you do this, just go ahead and click submit, and we'll get a hold of you, and we'll work out the deal with the terms and everything. Okay, let's take some questions.
Okay. Good morning, Gary. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you for taking my call. Jim, just a question, some clarity. You mentioned something about doing something for cash flow so that you don't show that you personally own the house or something, or pay rent on the house. Or can you clarify that? I misunderstood what you were saying.
Well, what we're talking about is if a trust has a bunch of cash sitting there, and a lot of people say, well, geez, you know, I've got $100,000 sitting in the bank. I need to make some money with that. So they'll invest that $100,000, hoping they'll make some money. Well, that's not what I was talking about. We don't want to do that. What we want to do is take that $100,000, use it as collateral to go borrow a little bit of money. If you have money in the bank, you can actually borrow money at less than 1%. If you use cash for collateral. And so then you invest that little bit of money. So worst case scenario is the investment goes south, and now you got to make some payments on that loan. But you didn't lose your principal. So that's the worst case scenario. So the other thing that I think you were alluding to is paying yourself, paying rent to your trust, and paying a payment on your car to your trust. Well, that obviously indicates that the trust owns it, and you're just using it. So that's what we were trying to establish. If there's any question, if you are paying a little bit to the trust, then it's very obvious you don't own the car.
Yeah.
How would we set that up? How would we set that up, or how much should we do? Like when we have a house, if we have two houses, how much would be reasonable to expect to pay for rent on the house to show that we don't own it, that the trust owns it?
Fair market value.
Yeah, that's the you establish the fair market value, but then you have to establish what's the fair rent in the area. All right, now remember, the trusts are going to pay you to be trustee. So they can supply you with certain things as a benefit, but those that exceed the common sense benefit, then you want to start paying back some of that money. You want to start making payments on the house that you're living in, and maybe a payment on a car.
Okay.
Now, when you're paying that back to the trust, if you think about it, the trust paid you to pay that. It's a round robin.
Yeah.
But it's a legal round robin. It's a way for you to establish that you don't own the asset. You just
Is there a document available to set that up?
No, it's just a standard minute. It's a little contract, and that's what we're working on the website.
Yeah, so and a rental agreement or a lease agreement.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's this little contract that you have, a one-pager that you agreed.
Okay. Thank you. That's a great idea. Thank you.
Okay.
You're welcome.
There you go.
I think, Gary, you also said something about buying property, and Jim was talking about if you're entering into escrow for real property, use your own name followed by "and other assigns."
Right.
Yeah, we will then, you know, we'll try our best to have your completed real estate trust by the time your escrow closes.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I've got an unfamiliar name here. Area code 973?
Yes.
Hello? Hi, this is Carol. Who's this?
Oh, hi. My name is Terry. Yeah, that's my New Jersey area code. I'm calling from New Jersey.
Great. What can we do for you today?
I had a question. I listened to a couple of your archive meetings and stuff. I never was on live. And one of them I was interested in, you had mentioned they were talking about purchasing properties, and you were talking about going into flipping houses. That's kind of sort of what I do. But you never got back into it because they hit you with some more questions. was wondering, is it possible to use the trust for flipping properties, or is it not possible?
I don't recall we had that conversation, did we, Jim?
I think we actually talked about it one time, briefly. Yes, you can use a trust for that. You can sell a house in the trust, or out of the trust, rather. You can buy the house into the trust. Does that make sense? Excuse me. And then you can sell the house out of the trust.
Okay, because that's sort of the business I'm into. Basically, you purchase foreclosures, and then I'll renovate them, and then turn around and sell them again. I noticed you saying you shouldn't do more than one house in the same trust. Would you have to do multiple trusts for each property? Do you have to do, like, start a new trust each time?
No. You can use the same trust over and over and over, but you only want to put one house in the trust. So if you're going to be doing this lot, maybe you need three or four trusts that you can roll houses into and out of. There are other ways to do this that are really exciting and fun to do, and I've done a huge one 10, 15 years ago, a long time ago, where I had a sophisticated seller and a sophisticated buyer. And so we took a corporation that was making money, and we covered that in a trust. And then we had him be the trustee, and then we bought in a buyer that created a trust, and he was a trustee. And then the two gentlemen just switched jobs. And so one guy that had the business actually ended up being the trustee of a large checking account. And the guy that had the large checking account became the trustee of the business. You can do the same thing with real estate. You know, you could put a house in real estate into the real estate into the trust, and then you can actually become the ex-trustee if somebody was to want to be the trustee and fund it by having another trust that they put the cash in. That's not a sale. It's an exchange of duties.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's what I was wondering. You know, purchasing a house to live in is a little different than buying one that you're only going to have for about 6 months and then turn around and sell it.
Yeah. Well, at the end of the show, I'm going to give my phone number out, and you can call me and we can talk more about that. I was a realtor for many, many years. I had license in three states, so I played the game with trust and real estate. So I know a little bit about that.
Okay. And plus, I heard what you were saying about the Andor signs. And in New Jersey, they don't allow you to sign contracts.
That's interesting. Because, you know, a contract is the one thing that the Constitution guarantees you that they cannot screw with.
Yeah. We have the right to contract.
Yep. Article 1, Section 10 is very explicit. And if your state is violating that, maybe they should be taken to task.
Maybe so.
That's up to you. Okay. Why would they want not allow you to assign a contract? That just seems awfully strange.
Yes, it does. I agree.
Flipping, you can look that up. The big thing about trying everything to keep you from flipping houses, like people wholesale houses and stuff, you have to, before you could, I could put a house under contract, sell it to you, assign the contract to you, and make an assignment fee, like make $5,000, $10,000. They stop it that way. Now I'll have to actually purchase the house and then have another closing the same day to resell it to you, which is yeah, but that's what they do in New Jersey. It's kind of rough. That's why I was asking about the using these. Is there a way to flip houses and stuff? A double claim, you got to pay transfer tax twice. You got to pay everything twice. Literally, they have a business out here where people just fund those type of transactions for a small fee. Because that's the only way they allow you to do it.
Well, you know, I'd suggest possibly relocating because that's unlawful activity, as far as I can tell. And I live in Oregon, which is really, really, really a strange state, and I'm getting ready to bail as soon as the RV happens. I'm out of here, only because we've gotten so stupid out here. I mean, the government. I don't want to go into it. It's they're morons. Plus, anything on the left coast, Oregon, Washington, California, a lot of parts of this is really, really, really liberal. And I know it's the same on the east coast. The Midwest is not near as bad to do business in. The profit is probably not there, but hey, Anyway, yeah, give me a call. We'll talk more about that. I might be able
all
to
right.
come up with a solution. I don't know.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. You bet.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us. Jim, we don't have any more questions right now that I can see.
Okay.
So we must be doing a really good job.
Yeah. Or they're bored to tears, one of the two. Well, there's a lot of things going on out there right now. Strange things are happening, and some of the stuff that we're reading is it's just bizarre. It's beyond bizarre what some
yes.
of the people states are doing. I'm going to try and pull up an article real quick that I was looking at this morning that I thought was extremely interesting and germane to what we're talking about. I'm reading from The Sovereign Man. If you folks have not ever heard of The Sovereign Man, it's a great company, and I can send you, I put the link. What I'm going to do is, Carol, do you think it would be okay if we put the Sovereign Man link on our website?
I don't see why not. If it's a public website, I don't see why not.
Yeah, it is. It's good. But he talks about some interesting things. He observes, and he's a very wealthy man, he observes what's going on globally, and he talks about it. He's a big proponent of Puerto Rico, and I am too. But he's talking about some of the weirdest things happening, like the college newspaper will no longer report any triggering news. What? So the Daily Northwestern student newspaper from the renowned Northwestern University, staff as of the aspiring journalist has decided to stop covering any traumatic event on campus because it triggers people.
Oh, jeez.
And
this is currently going to go away, huh?
Yeah, yeah. And then I mentioned the Midwest. So here's a university professor hates rural Americans. He says, unironically embrace the bashing of rural Americans. They as a group are bad people who have made bad life decisions. This nostalgia for some imagined pastoral way of life is stupid, and we should shame people who aren't pro-city.
Let's reiterate, Jim, that you are reading this, and this is not your opinion.
Yes, I'm reading because we were talking about the absurdity of some of the state laws that the caller was talking about in New Jersey. I thought, that plays right into what I was reading earlier, how absurd the governments are becoming.
Yes, absolutely. Wow.
Oh, by the way, the British Academic Union says you can now identify as black and disabled. You know,
what?
Well, you might as well. You can identify as four or five different.
Whatever.
Yeah. Okay, can you go back to any questions?
And we do have a few more questions. Okay. Rob, you're up.
Jim and Carol.
Hey, Rob.
Carol, you had mentioned, before the live call that it's already been done. We're just waiting. And
that's what I have.
And I was just wondering, has the rates changed with the dinar and the VND?
The most recent thing that I saw was $3.91 for the dinar. $28.50 is the contract rate. And there's a cap at $10 million, after which you get the $3.91. The dong is 47 cents to $6. And there's also a $10 million cap on that. Now, just to let everybody know, I'm just repeating what I have read. I do not come across this information on my own. I don't look for it. It's what I have read. I have read, as you mentioned, that this RV has started, and they're still trying to get this done by Thanksgiving. So, let's hope so.
Yeah, really. This has been a long, long journey.
A long 10 years, haven't it, Jim?
Yes. Yes.
So anything else?
You're saying the VND, $47 to $6? Wow.
Yeah. And yep. I remember when we first bought the ND, we were hoping it would come in at a nickel.
Yeah.
Well, then, so. Carol, anything over nickel, you just give to me.
Oh, okay. All right, Jim.
Jim, is the, I'm trying to think, oh, the, what was it, the AAA is charging, what was
AAA.
It? AAA.
Oh, you're talking about AAA? Yeah, there's about $46 a million for the dong right now.
Okay. So that still stands.
Well, as of right now, Carol and I have got some interesting things we're doing transfer-wise. Should we talk about that briefly?
Yeah, I don't wait. I mean, you've been more involved with it recently than I have been, so go for it.
Okay, well, first off, Carol and I do not benefit from anything we're about to tell you, indirectly. Directly, possibly, if you work directly with us. But we found a debit card called TransferWise that you can put 46 different currencies on it. So what I've done is I went ahead and opened a TransferWise account, and I bought some dong, and actually got it cheaper than AAA. So I bought the dong, the Vietnamese dong, and it's on my card. So I have, and I bought some Indonesia rupiah. I think that's how you pronounce it, rupiah. Anyway, I bought three currencies, U.S. dollar. I have 100 U.S. dollars on there. Then I have some Vietnamese dong on there, and then I have some Indonesia rupiah, so whatever that is. So when the RV occurs, the value on my balance on the card will change dramatically. Let's just say it comes in at 24 cents. And if I had a million VND that I paid $47 for, $46 for, whatever it was, now I have approximately a quarter of a million U.S. in that account. So I can use the card right away before I have to go to an exchange. I'm being careful here. Before I go to an exchange, and I'd be able to have enough cash to fund the trip to the exchange and whatever I need, legal fees and so on and so forth. Now, I don't believe that would be considered double dipping because you owned it and it just changed and you're just using it. Because you bought it well before the RV.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a process that you go through. You sign up for the card. You have to put a minimum of 20 U.S. dollars on the card. And they're, I can't remember the word they use, but anyway, corresponding. Their corresponding bank in America is Wells Fargo. And so I use my debit card to move the money into my TransferWise account in the process of purchasing the other two currencies. If you want more information, just get hold of me, send me an email, and we'll send you out an invite code. Carol and I both will start working on that for you,
mm-hmm.
get those invite codes out.
Yeah, and it's relatively easy to set up.
And
as Jim says, you don't have to wait to go to your exchange to realize the money from the dong. Or whatever it is that you buy. And it acts as a multi-currency account.
Let me explain to you how I'm going to do this.
Please.
Ricardo. Anyway, so here's what we're going to do. When the RV happens, the value of my card goes up, and then I go with my little debit card, and I go to the local FBO, flight base operator, and I charter my jet, and I fly down to wherever I'm going to exchange. So that's how I'm going to do it.
Yeah. And you've got money in hand without actually exchanging the bulk of your funds. It makes
right.
so much sense.
Yeah, and what I'll do is I will move most of that money back into Wells Fargo.
So, Jim?
Questions? Yeah.
So you're saying you purchase this debit card, and then you can get whatever currency, and like you were talking about the VND at $47, and when an RV's, that's going to be on your debit card.
Yeah, it'll come out at the 25 cents or whatever it is. It'll go up to whatever the revaluation of the currency was instantly. I mean,
instantly.
And you got it.
So if it goes up a dollar, right?
Yeah.
You've made, and you don't have to go?
No, with all on the debit card.
Yeah, you have some on your debit card. You're going to use that for your funding of everything else you're doing, but you still have to go to the RV to exchange the rest of your currencies. Now, you cannot hold IQD in there yet, but you can hold a whole bunch of other currencies. Now, here's what this was designed for. In fact, when you sign up, they're going to ask you why, and I tick the boxes. I'm going to hold currencies and to benefit from the exchange rates. They ask you that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I ticked. And I have, it's 46 different currencies. So here's what happens. If you're going to go to Europe, you exchange some of your money in your account on that card into euros now. And when you get there, there's no fees to use your MasterCard debit card in Europe to use the card. There's no fees. You already own the currency. It's only debits your account for the currencies you have. So if you're in Europe, and you need to use euros, they're there automatically. So you can have up to 46 different currencies. I'll have U.S. dollars. I'm going to do some traveling. Before I go anywhere, I'm going to throw a whole bunch of money, buy that amount of money, that currency, and put it on that card. And you can always liquidate it and transfer it back to your Wells Fargo account. It's a really cool idea.
Yeah, I
have a friend is planning a trip to Europe next winter, I think, and she's buying currency of that country now. So she's just keeping it in her TransferWise account. When she gets there, she doesn't have to worry. You don't have to worry about exchange rates. You don't have to worry about it. It's going to be really expensive in a year from now, whatever. So she's banking it now in that country's currency. It just makes so much sense. It really does.
Yeah. So, did you say there was a minimum or maximum or?
A minimum of $20 to open the account.
$20.
But that's it. $20 U.S. to open the account. So, just if you want more information, just email me, and I'm going to be here all weekend, and I'll just send out invites so you can see the system. And I have instructions on how to do this that Karen put together for us. They're not 100% accurate, so I'm going to go back through them and clean them up a little bit. And then I've got some screenshots of my account and show you what I have in my account. And, I'll send up the whole nine yards. So, just let us know. We'll give you our information before we leave the show.
Well, thank you, Jim and Carol, very much.
You're welcome, right. Rob. You're welcome. Hey, we do have a few more callers.
Okay, let's do it.
Memphis, area code 901. Area code 901.
Yes, I will just email you. I think you've answered my question for the moment. Thank you.
Okay, all right, thank you. Good morning, Dean. How are you today?
Just fine. How are you doing, Carol?
Pretty well, thanks. What's on your mind?
I'm uncertain about the working of the certificate. I know you can issue a dividend, and use it that way. But once you give a dividend, say there's two or three people involved, do you ever get that dividend back or until you die?
The certificate. Yeah, you get certificates when you create the trust.
Right.
So you're a single guy. You got all 100 trust certificate units because you are the only one that put anything into the trust to begin with, okay? If
right.
you were married, you would have 50 and your wife would have 50. Should you decide to make a distribution, in your case, you would get 100% of whatever that distribution is.
Right.
And a married couple, they'd both get 50. Okay, let's go down the line. Say your past, and so your daughter and your son-in-law, your daughter and your son and your nephew are successor trustees.
Sure.
So they are going to redistribute those 100 certificate units equally among themselves.
Okay.
So let's say one of them decides to make a one-time distribution. They would all participate in equally. The certificates prove that you did do something. Your exchange is part of this original certificate is part of your exchange. That's why you got it. Further on down the line, it just means that they have an interest in the trust. You don't have to make a distribution ever if you don't want to. And when you die, the certificate dies. The certificate becomes null and void. That's why they
right.
need to be distributed.
Right. But on this, is that longer ago you were talking about possibly issuing a certificate for work done or something. Is that still something that is done or that? Is it worked that way?
Jim, you want to take that?
I don't know if I understood the question. So
if you say you wanted something for the corporation and somebody else had it, rather than pay for it, you offer him a certificate, which I assume he would get any percentage of the profit of the company, or even is that something to think about? If you issue a certificate for something other than a dividend, is that certificate out there until death?
Okay, that's collateralized. So what you're saying is, well, I wouldn't do that, frankly. I would never touch the certificates because that goes to your family.
Okay, that answers me.
Yeah, you can pledge the part of your checking account, savings account, whatever you have in the trust, whatever the trust has, you can pledge part of that cash as collateral to go over and borrow money to put to work. That's what I was trying to do, and that's what I've done in the past. And then I put the money to work, and then when the contract comes to an end, I've got my profit. Then I pay back, or I actually release the cash from the encumbrance because the transaction has been consummated, and then I can do that over.
Okay. That's what I was trying to get to, Jim, and I appreciate the answer. Thank you.
All right. You bet.
Okay. Daphne, you're up next.
Carol,
yeah.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you, yes.
Okay. My information has to do with TransferWise. I'm not trying to burst any bubbles here, but I'm going to use someone as an example. When you do the TransferWise, just please, Jim or Carol's website or whatever, they will give it to you personally. I wouldn't give it out over the phone.
No,
but,
I agree.
One person did this, and a lot of people call and start asking questions to the people instead of reading information on the website. And their account got suspended, and because they had sent it out to so many people. So just be careful. They will only, if these people spend a certain amount of money, then yes, there is a referral. But they will only do three. I don't care how many you refer, they will only do three. Okay? This is to the audience that's listening. It is a great way to have immediate money after the RV, as Jim stated, because the money is immediate. And that helps you to maybe get a flight somewhere, like Jim said, or to get cash in your hand if you need to go buy something or whatever. Just be careful. You don't want to put a lot of money into that because it's not going to be the RV rate, but it will be better than you going to the bank for just the regular rate, say, on the dong, or maybe even the rupiah or whatever. But when you do this also, if you go to an ATM, it'll ask you a question in regards to, do you want them to convert the money? And you will say no, because TransferWise will convert it automatically depending on where you are. So if you're here in the U.S., and if you call, they will tell you your rate to withdraw here in the state is a lot higher than what it says on the website. But just read the site before you try to call them or say who referred you. Please be careful with that, because you don't want to get anybody's account suspended. They're giving you information to help you to have immediate cash after the RV happens, and so it's like immediate. Their rates are cheaper. You can. There are two ways that they do it: ACH, which is automatically taken from your account, but that rate is higher. If you use a debit card, the rate is much cheaper. Instead of paying $48.81 for $1 million, you pay about $43 because you're using your debit card, and it's like 72 cents. So whatever the rate is for that. So just be careful. You can also, when you buy, let's say you buy $1 million worth of dong, you can transfer a portion of that over and buy rupiah. Okay, so that way you don't have to put a whole lot of money into it, because a lot of people will. They may buy 3 or 4 mil. You don't want to do that. You may buy 1 of dong and 1 million of rupiah, or maybe 1 million or something else if it's available. But whatever other rates, other currencies you want, you might want to just transfer some money from your dong or the rupiah portion that you have in there to the other currency. Like Jim said, if you want to go to Europe, then you just transfer it over to euros. So you'll have that information. So just be careful. It still is a great way to do it. I'm not trying to put a damper on anything. Just want you to be cautious. I don't want you to get somebody's account frozen where they will never get it back. Because they're doing you a favor trying to help you out. Okay? Thank you.
Well, thank you, Daphne. That was great information.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to add to that that, as I mentioned, probably to be more explicit, I've got quite a bit of dong on there, only because it's such a good rate to buy it at that rate. I couldn't refuse. So I bought enough. And then but I'm going to transfer it right back over to Wells Fargo. I don't plan on using the TransferWise debit card unless I'm traveling. I'd rather use my bank account because I got a little more of a secure way of doing things through Wells Fargo. But yes, we'll send you the information out there. I guess they pay $75 if somebody buys $300 at one shot. Well, they only do that for three accounts. You can refer as many people as you want. You just don't get paid on the rest of it. And that's all I was going to do, is just refer you over there, and I don't make any money off it now. I've got more than three. I've already done it. So it just is a way to use another tool, another arrow in your quiver, shall we say, mm-hmm. that you can use at the time when the RV happens. You can have cash instantly. And I totally agree with what she said. Totally agree with it. She's 100%. I'm glad she brought all that up. So it's just a way to have some instant cash, and because Jimmy needs a jet to go to go to the exchange. So, some of you may not know this, so I used to fly those darn things for a living. Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway. Well, Jim, we don't have any other questions, so there is one thing I would like to add. You know, having trust and doing all this stuff is just part of your estate planning. So when considering your estate planning options, we encourage you to look at our triple play. And the triple play includes a power of will, a power of attorney, and a health care directive. The triple play is $275 for a single and $350 for a couple. And while we don't sell insurance, you might consider talking with your agent about beefing up your policies, adding umbrella insurance, annuities, nursing home insurance, Medicare supplemental, and end-of-life policies. I also recently heard on somebody else's call about how to become your own banker, and it's a very ingenious way of maximizing your money. So you might want to go to Amazon and just look up Nelson Nash. He's the author. Or just look up How to Become Your Own Banker. There are several books written on it. And it's a combination of using your insurance the paid-up portion of your insurance, et cetera, et cetera. It's very, it's really interesting, an interesting read, so I encourage you to take a look at it. And, you know, like many of you, and this is what we're talking about, we've heard you must have a trust when we exchange. So we do urge you to be prepared. And a typical turnaround right now is less than a week, because Jim is very, very good. But we expect that to be considerably longer post-survey. You know, our contract trusts are well-priced at only $19.95 for new clients and $11.95 for additional trusts or family members. We also offer 20% referral fee for any fully paid new trust. Right now, we are still offering our 40% off special until the end of November. And because those rates are so low, we cannot pay referral fee on them, but just be they're available for them for another week at that price. You know, there's so much going on with all of us, I believe, right now. It's heading into Thanksgiving, heading into the holidays, and we are all hearing more and more that we're closer and closer to this RV. So you need to do what you need to do to get prepared. So that's pretty much about it for today. Thank you, Jim, for your assistance, as always. Would you like to give us your contact information?
Sure. Let me pull it up real quick, because I have that new 800 number, and I don't remember what it is. Oh, just a second. Here we go. All right, so I'm in Oregon. Don't hold it against me. I'm only here temporarily. I'm only here for the weather. And you can call me at 503-583-6791 or 866-341-6907, and you get hold of me at security@indicatorinformation.com. I try to not work too much on weekends. I need a day of rest. I work between 9 and about 7 every day, West Coast time. I've got a couple calls at 6:30 in the morning recently. I'm not on the East Coast. For you East Coasters, I'm on the West Coast. Okay. With that said, Carol?
All right. Thank you all for your attention and participation. You know, we'll be back in a couple of weeks. I'm in Central Time Zone. Like Jim, I don't like to get started before 9 o'clock. Usually work till about 5 or 5:30. Feel free to call me during those hours. I also like to take the weekends off. So enjoy your weekend. May it be blessed one for all of us. You know, my name is Carol Werlius. My phone number is 877-333-5018 or 425-820-8090. And my email is info@indicatorinformation.com. Thanks again, everybody, and have a happy Thanksgiving. Bye-bye.